Kilo G. He rolled down his window and he started to say, "Hi, I'm John Bullock, sitting in here for Mark Steiner, here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. On our way to break, we heard Close the Door by Teddy Pendergrass, who was born on this day in 1950. Coincidentally, my father was born that year. And now coming back from the break, you're hearing Boys in the Hood by Eazy-E, who died on this day in 1995. From school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues impacting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at marylandeducators.org. That's marylandeducators.org. Here with me in this segment, Bert Cumero, president of the Maryland Historical Society, Susan Stroop, co-director of the Mesmeric Revelations of Edgar Allan Poe, an interdisciplinary theater artist based in Baltimore, and Glenn Rickey, producer and co-director of Mesmeric Revelations of Edgar Allan Poe. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks for having us on.
You guys have a lot going on. you know, I got a chance to give us a little background on some of the things you guys are doing this spring. Seems very interesting.
Well, they came, I guess, a few months ago looking for a good space to do something about Edgar Allan Poe and some really innovative theatrical production. And we were very taken by the whole thing because the anchor of our whole block of Maryland Historical Society is the Enoch Pratt House, built in the 1840s, and it's a beautiful, beautiful big mansion, about four stories tall. And we have spent lots of time and effort on other parts of our block. So we're getting ready to work as we approach our 100th anniversary at that location on the interior of the house. And it was a perfect setting to do something a little bit spooky, you know, kind of a old-fashioned interior of a house. And that's what led to us really working with this group. And it's turned out to be a wonderful way to reintroduce the Enoch Pratt House and at the same time do something very innovative. We're known as a venerable old institution, and this kind of cutting-edge stuff is really, really good for us, I'll tell you right now.
You said the term spooky, and I looked at the trailer, and I used the term creepy. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I heard some music going on. Tell me about that project. I think that's really interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's an immersive theater project, so that means that you are in the house while events are happening around you, and it's like we've created this little world, and you won't be able to see everything that happens in an evening. You just sort of choose which characters you want to follow, what parts of the set you want to look at, what rooms you want to hang out in, and you explore this world. And the focus is on Edgar Allan Poe's life and stories sort of put together, with a special focus on the women in his life, which is why I'm glad Susan can join me today. I chose her as my co-director, not only because she's very smart and accomplished, but she is also a woman. And and I felt, you know, if we're going to have this as a focus, I should involve women at the highest levels. We also have our movement coordinator, Michelle Minnick, who had a lot of input in the direction we were taking.
Well, and the women of the show, or I guess I should back up a little bit, we have six characters that participate in the show that you will be able to interact with when you're immersed in the world. And the three female characters are all based on real people, unlike the other three characters who are kind of compilations or fictional characters. And Edgar Allan Poe had some really interesting women involved in his life. His mother was a Shakespearean actress who died very young, and his wife, Virginia, also died very young and was also considered to be a pretty accomplished singer in her own right. And then another character we have based on is a character named Sarah, who's based on Sarah Helen Whitman, who was a poet and a mesmerist. She ran seances. She was a spiritualist. She was a very interesting person, and she and Poe were engaged after his first wife's death for a very short amount of time before he died. And so she's another character involved. And so we've been really exploring who these three women are in this world. They exist in this world altogether, even though some of them are alive and some of them are dead, and who they are as people and who they are as humans. And that's been a really interesting exploration with our actresses, who were very involved in the creation of these characters for this show.
Well, once again, if you're interested and you want to talk, please call in 410-319-8888. So this project just or the show just began. How long is this going to run? What's the time frame here?
It's Thursdays through Saturdays, running through May 16th. And it's virtually, if not entirely, sold out.
Wow. That's awesome.
Right. But if you go on the Facebook, if you find us Mesmeric Revelations at Edgar Allan Poe on Facebook, occasionally tickets become available. So you can tune in there, and you can also keep updates. Maybe we'll have another reiteration of it at another time. We'll see.
All right. You know, there's also something else you're doing with the Historical Society, and it kind of fits in a little bit. It's a little bit off of Edgar Allan Poe, but thinking about the whole coffin piece, I saw a little bit of that. You want to talk a little bit about?
Well, we're calling our efforts around the city this spring our Morbid Spring, because there's a lot. You talk about death and dying, but you also can talk, you know, historically. It's so much a part of us, you know, as because of our human condition, and just the whole idea of having something with this subject made a lot of sense. And years ago, I was lucky enough, about more than 20 years ago now, to be the director at Historic St. Mary City, and we were working on the chapel down there. It's all archaeological. And they discovered three lead coffins. And these coffins have gone through an incredible episode with lots and lots of scientists and researchers trying to figure out who these anonymous people, who were obviously people of status because they were buried in lead, which was brought from England, who they were and what it could tell us about life in the Chesapeake during the 17th century. So this is the culmination because it's coming back to me and also to Baltimore, so people can see the exhibit that just opened yesterday. It's all about living in the Chesapeake in the 17th century and what these bodies can tell us. And they're going to be taken back to St. Mary City and buried in their original location early next year. But this will be here this year, and it's a fascinating exercise in a period that nobody knows much about for the most part, but they've done pioneering research down at Historic St. Mary City, and it's exciting for us to have this as one of our anchors along with the Mesmeric Revelations. And there are things around the city that are going on as well, including the commemoration of the death of Lincoln with the funeral train recreation at the B&O Railroad Museum.
No, I think that, you know, you mentioned the Morbid Spring, but I think it's also interesting thinking about the history that's encompassed here with the state of Maryland. Think about Maryland Day recently passing, but then also looking at the Calvert family. I think that's mm-hmm. sort of you know, part of what's happening with that coffin exhibit, thinking about what were the conditions when people just came to Maryland at that point.
Yes. What we have, of course, are people who were at the absolute top of the class situation, because Lord Baltimore's family were aristocrats back in England, and the first Lord Baltimore's youngest son was a man by the name of Philip Calvert. And without getting into a lot of convoluted history about England and Civil War and lots of trouble between Catholics and Protestants, they sent this youngest son, Philip Calvert, over here in the 1650s. And it was during the 20-year period that he was in St. Mary City that he literally created the institutions that became Maryland colony and state. And they were, by a process of elimination, which is really fascinating, partly historical documents, partly just analysis of the graves, they were able to determine this was Philip Calvert and his family, who died in the 1680s. His wife, his first wife, is buried in the second coffin, and the third coffin contains an infant who was about 6 months old and probably never had a chance to survive. She was very sick from the very beginning of her very short life, and it was hard to figure out who this child was until historical research developed the fact that this was a daughter born posthumously to Philip Calvert, because he wanted an heir and a child, and he married a very young lady after his first wife died. So we have all three tentatively identified. It's pretty exciting stuff, and it's very, very rare to get any kind of physical contact with the settlers of Maryland in the 17th century. And even though this is a little bit spooky, my term again, it's It's fascinating stuff, and we're pretty excited about it.
I do think it's great. And one of the consistent themes has been the role that women have played. And so we look at it, you know, all throughout. I think it's also worth mentioning. You mentioned the historical nature, not only, of St. Mary's cities, but also thinking about the Enoch Pratt House. And so so how do you see all these things fitting together? Because I think there's so much history, even about Baltimore, that you can kind of get with the Enoch Pratt House.
Well, the Enoch Pratt House was finished, you can correct me, but 1845?
Yeah, 46. And they added a fancy thing in the 1860s because he was a very wealthy man.
Right.
And a great philanthropist.
So it directly coincides, if we're talking about Edgar Allan Poe, with kind of the last few years of his life. So when it became available for us to do the performance in, we started actually rehearsing before we knew what space we were going to be in. It was kind of just like a dream that this house that was exactly the time period that we were researching became a character in the show. So when you come to see the show, the house is as much of a character as any of the human characters are, which has been really great to play around in as well.
Mm. Yeah, actually, the front door plays a big role for me because I saw a preview, and walking in that front door is like walking into another world because it's, you know, it's right there on the street. I was thinking about the fact that Edgar Allan Poe could have very well walked by there several times, and you know, because he was in town. So it really has a lot of relevance for doing something like this. It's very good.
That door is a gorgeous gateway into the space. We'd like to think that Edgar Allan Poe would kind of be interested in approve of what we're doing. We tend to think maybe Enoch Pratt maybe would think it was kind of strange. We're waiting for some ghosts to actually emerge, but no one's bothered us yet from the netherworlds.
So how long, you said this is going to go for how long?
Through mid-May.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And where it springs up after this, who knows?
Okay, once again, 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, or you can comment on our Facebook page or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. So in producing this, what kinds of, you know, because you're co-directing it, you're producing this, what kind of challenges, if any, did you come across in this process? And how do you look at the future of projects like this, the sort of total experience that you're creating here?
I think the importance about it is finding the right team, and I got lucky. I like maybe my intuition had something to do with it, but I feel very lucky to be working with the people I have. It's a hugely collaborative work. It's like having 6 2-hour plays running concurrently and overlapping. So these six different characters are all on their own path. No one is ever off stage. It takes a lot of energy for them to do the show, but we had to generate an enormous amount of material because, you know, we have these major events happening. You know, there's a ballroom scene, there's a seance, there's places where they all come together. But in between these scenes, there's smaller scenes, and in between those scenes, the characters have to figure out what they're doing. So the performers had a great deal of input and had to create a lot of material themselves, in addition to Susan and I sort of curating the whole thing and making it fit together as a larger system. There's also a concurrent soundscape that runs throughout that all of the action is cued off to. So it's sort of like a movie soundtrack that's running. And it just, we hit go at the top of the show, and people start, the motion starts, and then they all know their cues, and they all hit their marks throughout the next 2 hours.
And in the theater world, this is called a devised work, is what we call a devised piece of theater, which means that we come in with just ideas. We don't come in with a script. You don't come in with any set structure of what it's going to be. And so you're kind of creating everything from scratch. And fortunately for us, the actors in Baltimore are wonderful at this. They're up for anything. They're creative. They're energetic. They're so ready to create interesting kinds of theater. I think Baltimore has such an interesting theater scene right now. There's so much happening that's really adventurous and really out of the box. And it's people who are interested in making theater that will make you think, will make you, will kind of knock you off balance things. I mean, we have things like Artscape, which is, I think, a culmination of that sort of work in Baltimore. And there's a lot of theaters who are doing work that is really more interesting, I think, than other places in the country that you would find. So our actors were really ready to do work that was kind of beyond the normal theater that you might find in other places.
Mm. I think it's one of the best things about, you know, what you guys are doing, even promoting theater in Baltimore. I mean, it's such a thriving scene. I think that's so great. And how being a curator sort of work with that? I mean, you mentioned being a curator.
Well, yeah, I think the word curator just describes the process of directing a devised, immersive piece, because devised work is difficult in that about 90% of the ideas that you come up with in the rehearsal process, you just don't end up using. So you generate, I mean, all of the material that we generated, all of the ideas probably the show would end up being like 10 hours. Mm-hmm. So you end up having to let go of a lot of great ideas that you come up with. And so the process of being a director, I think curator is a good way to put it, is that you kind of have to cull the best ideas and the ideas that are going to feed into the whole show, even though there might be an idea that's really great, but it's just not the thing that's going to work for the show.
Mm-hmm. I should say this project started with a Ruby's Art Grant from the Greater Baltimore Cultural Alliance, and that kicked the whole thing off and let me pay everybody involved for the development process. I just think it's really important that these performers who are so skilled get paid something for the work. I couldn't even pay them what they're worth. It was everyone got a stipend. But I wanted to keep it a Baltimore production. I knew a lot of people in New York and in Pittsburgh, where I grew up, that were doing immersive theater, and not so much of it was happening here in recent time.
Hmm. Well, I think this sounds like an awesome, awesome adventure. I think I need to try to scrounge up a ticket or something like that. So maybe I'll keep checking back. But thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. Bert Cumrow, president of the Maryland Historical Society, Susan Stroop, co-director of Mesmeric Revelations of Edgar Allan Poe, interdisciplinary theater artist based here in Baltimore, mm-hmm. Glenn Ritchie, producer and co-director of Mesmeric Revelations of Edgar Allan Poe.
Can I put in a quick plug
yes, please.
PNC that really was working with us on this and helped us prepare the house for the run of the performances, and we really thank them for working with us on this.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm John Bullock, sitting in for Mark Steiner. We have to take a brief break, but don't go away. On our way to break, we're hearing Run, Run, Run by the Supremes, and Diana Ross's Supremes was born on this day in 1944.